जया राधा माधवा कुंजा बिहारी, जया गोपी जनवा गिरी वरदारी, यशोदनन्दन भ्रज जनरञ्जन, जामुनिरावनचारी, जय राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी, Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharyashchaturashita Shri Srimati Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Raja Granta Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Swamvita Bhaktivedanta Ki Vidhaya Gopinamanandi Agaris Adhisamundavaris Agaris Adhisamundavaris Agaris Shishiguranga Uranga Om Agyanta Mirandascha Girajana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadhati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyarevacha Patita nam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Shrimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 8, Text 31. Word-to-word meaning. Tasminapi. In that ashram. Pulaha ashram. Kalam. The end of the duration of life in the dear body. Pratikshamanaha. Always waiting for Sangat from association Cha and Vrisham constantly Udvigna full of anxiety Atma Sahachara having the super soul as the only constant companion. No one should think of being alone. Shukshka parnat, Shukshka parnatrina virudha. By eating only the dry leaves and herbs. Vartamanaha, existing. Mrigatva nimita, of the cause of a deer's body. Avasadam, the end. Eva, only. Ganayan, considering. Mriga shariram, the body of a deer. Tirta udaka klinam, bathing in the water of that holy place. Usasarja, gave up. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, remaining in that ashram, the great king, Bharata Maharaj, was now very careful not to fall victim to bad association. Without disclosing his past to anyone, which would be difficult in a dear body, he remained in that ashram and ate dry leaves only. He was not exactly alone, for he had the association of the Supersoul. In this way, he waited for death in the body of a deer. Bathing in that holy place, he finally gave up that body. Purport, holy places like Vrindavan, Haridwar, Prayag, and Jagannath Puri are especially meant for the execution of devotional service. Vrindavan, specifically, is the most exalted and preferred holy place for Vaishnava devotees of Lord Krishna, who are aspiring to return back to Godhead, the Vaikuntha planets. There are many devotees in Vrindavan who regularly bathe in the Jamuna, and this cleanses all the contamination of the material world. By constantly chanting and hearing the holy names and pastimes of the Supreme Lord, one certainly becomes purified and becomes a fit candidate for liberation. However, if one purposefully falls victim to sense gratification, he has to be punished at least for one lifetime, like Bharata Maharaj. That's inspiring. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 5th canto, 8th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled A Description of the Character of Bharata Maharaj. Hare Krishna. So Krishna is the Paramatattva. He's the supreme absolute truth. And everything he does is all good. Both his apparent rewards and his apparent punishment are equal to each other. Although for conditioned souls, they generally don't tend to take it that way, even after hearing a lot of Bhagavatam classes. But the actual truth is that whatever Krishna does is all good, especially for his devotee. Even when Krishna punishes the demons, that is all good for the demons, especially. One of the 64 qualities of Krishna, which is also present in Narayana, is that anyone who they personally kill, they get liberation, at least until the Brahman effulgence. So that's a pretty good deal for having been a demon your whole life. So Krishna, that is the kindness of Krishna. That is his nature. So anything he does is actually all good. And only the advanced devotee can see it in that way. Sometimes we meet people on the street, they say it's all good. And I always think to myself, you're not an Uttamadhikari. So how will you be able to perceive that? You have to be very advanced to actually see that everything is all good. And because everything is being arranged by the Supreme Lord, who is Suridham Sarvabhutanam, he's a well-wishing friend of all the living entities. So as Surida, there are different types of friends. There's a Banda, which means like a general, Banda is it? Banda? Bandhu. Bandhu means general, like a general friend. There's Maitri, Mitra, which is a more close associate. And a Surhit is one who's always thinking of the happiness of his friend, how to make his friend happy. So Krishna Suridham Sarvabhutanam, I mean, he's always thinking of the welfare of the living entity. And he's not under the modes of material nature, so he can actually do that to the most exalted degree. When we think of the welfare of other living entities under the influence of the modes of nature, we think giving them some cigarettes, or just like Maharaj likes to narrate that story of when he was on book distribution, and he came back from book distribution very late, and a person was leaving his body in the train station in New York. And everyone was naturally surrounding him, and it's quite interesting to see someone die live. Generally in America, they're very expert at hiding these things, actually. In India, you see it everywhere, so you become a little bit, how do you say, desensitized, or jaded. But in America, they're very expert that you don't see any of these things, so that the illusion of enjoyment is kept strong. So everyone's seeing a live death, so everyone's surrounding, Maharaj describes. And then someone, out of his mercy for the dying man, asked him, is there anything we can do for you? And he said, yes, I need a cigarette. give him a cigarette. So the living entities under the multi-material nature, this is the extent of their ability to think of the welfare of others. But Krishna is transcendental to the multi-nature. So when he actually is constantly thinking of the welfare of the living entity, it is to the most exalted degree. He's always thinking of how to bring the living entity back home, back to Godhead. So this is the nature of Krishna. Both, so his punishment and his apparent reward and punishment, they're equal to each other. So this is essential to understand about the nature of the Absolute Truth as we're on our sojourn back home, back to Godhead. Because we're reading a very interesting pastime where Bharata Maharaj, Prabhupada is mentioning here at the end of the purport, that if one purposely falls victim to sense gratification, he has to be punished, at least for one lifetime, like Bharata Maharaj. And so one may doubt, where is the protection of the Supreme Lord? Because he was obviously a very exalted devotee. So how is it that for a seemingly a minor mistake, like getting attached to a deer, I mean, there are worse things you could do. Especially in Kali Yuga, there are much worse things you can do. And that, there are worse things that we're regularly contemplating. What to speak of doing, we're regularly contemplating. And so for something apparently not so great, he's getting punished. But actually, this is the reward of the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada speaks about this, how if someone does some nonsense in Vrindavan, then they take birth as an animal. Although Krishna promises, Trayate Marato Bhayat, I was mentioning before, that one who takes the bhakti will be protected from the greatest fear, which is gliding down to the lower species. But if you go to Vrindavan and do some nonsense, then you take birth as an animal. But and that body as an animal is actually quite auspicious. For one reason is that it's in Vrindavan. So in the first part of the purport, Prabhupada speaking about the power of the holy dham. And the other reason that body is auspicious is that you can't commit offense in an animal body. This is one of the disadvantages in some sense of being a human being and going to the dham, is that if we're having an offensive nature, and generally we do tend to have an offensive nature because our hearts may still be captured by a sinful propensity, which will generally lead to some offensive action. So then you go as a human being, you risk committing offense in the dham, but as an animal you can't commit offense. And Prabhupada gives the main point of auspiciousness is that the Braja Raj, the dust of Braja, their animals are always rolling around in that dust. They're sleeping on that dust. And so that dust purifies them of all contamination. So after that birth, they go back home, back to Godhead. So that's not too shabby for having done nonsense in one life and take birth as an animal. It seems like inauspicious punishment. But actually it's a reward by rolling around. Generally, when you go to Vrindavan, the first thing you're supposed to do following the footsteps of Akura is to offer obeisances to the Braja Raj, you know, as soon as you enter Vrindavan. And also you feel inspired to do that. But generally, right when you offer obeisances, when you're very neophyte, the first thing you do when you get up, you know, my dress is gonna look a little bit off, you know. I want to look good when I walk into a Krishna Balaram Mandir. Actually, you don't realize that you look good if you have dust all over you. That's actually the attire to wear. But anyway, the tendency is to wipe it off. Actually, consider it an offense. is to do that. You offer obeisances and you just rise. It's actually very purifying, the dust of Vrindavan. And people will even bring the dust back from the dham, and you can put it in a salt shaker, and then you can sprinkle it in your prasadam and get benefited like that, actually. Put a little bit of... They say that it's like sweet rice mixed with sand, but the sand from Govardhan is very auspicious. So that would be a good idea. Anyway, so the Braja Raj purifies them. So although it seems that the Lord is punishing them, they're actually being supremely benefited. Although, and in those bodies, like here, Bharata Maharaj's case, Kuntaya Pratijani Hiname Bhakta Pranashati. Krishna protects the remembrance of the devotee. That is the main protection that needs to be there on account of forgetfulness of the Lord when it's sojourning through the material world, life after life. So having come to the point of being able to associate with Krishna and begin to cultivate remembrance, ultimate protection means to always be able to remember Krishna. So Krishna has offered that protection to Bharat Maharaj, that even in the body of a deer, he was able to remember him. And thus, Krishna augmented his loving devotion to him. So Krishna has this, the main problem facing a living entity is weakness of heart, hridaya durbalyam, which in one word is attachment to matter. Prabhupada discusses this in chapter 15, the last purport, I think, of chapter 15 of Bhagavad Gita. This is the main problem facing the conditioned soul. We have a weak heart. Weak heart means even though we know we should be doing something, we don't do it. And we know we should not be doing something, we do it. This is on account of the material attachment. So Krishna has his various ways of breaking that attachment and augmenting devotion to him. Probably the easiest method, which is the least painful, well, it depends on your perspective, but it's probably the least painful, is just to hear from Krishna. As Arjuna was able to do it, to break his weakness of heart. Arjuna just heard the Bhagavad Gita, and that was sufficient to break his weakness of heart. But oftentimes, that requires first-class intelligence, Prabhupada says in NOI. So many of us, I would venture to say, may be suffering from a lack of first-class intelligence on account of just being like really dumb before we came to the movement and being elevated to second-class intelligence. Second-class intelligence means being able to learn by experience. So then Krishna may provide an experience to help drag you back home, back to Godhead, and augment your devotion to him. There are many examples of this. Bharat Maharaj is a very good example here that should be noted with careful attention, that Krishna was actually helping to drag him back home, back to Godhead by making him take birth in the body of a deer. And thus, with remembrance of his sage consciousness. That's okay because sages have ability to tolerate. You can imagine on the other side was, I have to mention, is Manigriva and Nalukuvera. They took birth in tree bodies with demigod consciousness. That would be really miserable because demigod consciousness is intense enjoying spirit and also facility for enjoyment to a very large degree. So to take body in the birth of a tree with demigod consciousness, would be pretty painful. but to take body in the birth of a deer with sage consciousness means they're very sober. So he was able to actually reflect and augment his devotion in that body. That was the auspiciousness of that birth. There are other examples. Narada Muni in the first canto, after the sages, the Bhaktivedanta sages left, during the Chaturmasa season, they were there. Narada Muni was serving them, and he developed great attachment and love for them. Then they left. He wanted to travel with them, but he felt that his mother was there. This is a primary hridaya durbalyam, attachment to the family. Oh, who will take care of my mother? I'm not saying that's a bad thing, necessarily. Although it may not be always the best thing in terms of going back home, back to God. So actually he could do nothing practical for his mother, and his mother can also do nothing practical for him. But he felt in his heart that was his responsibility. And so he forego leaving with the sages, whom he was extremely attached to, in order to take care of his mother, whom he could not help at all. So Krishna made a very nice arrangement arranging for his mother to be bitten by a snake, and she died. We probably shouldn't tell this pastime on a Sunday feast. That would not be very inspiring, maybe, for the mothers. But Krishna made this arrangement for Narada Muni because she could also not help him, he could also not help her, but he was attached, weakness of heart. And he already heard from the sages, but still that weakness of heart was there, who to take care of the mother. And that is there. Even after hearing for a long time, one can be a victim of that. So Krishna made another arrangement. And she was bitten by snake bite. And Prabhupada comments in the purport that this is the way the Supreme Lord drags a sincere soul back home, back to Godhead. So we should take note of that. And this is the way the Supreme Lord drags a sincere soul back home, back to Godhead. Okay, the pravachan was insufficient for you. I have other methods as well, which I will employ. So in that way, Narada Muni, and the amazing thing about that is actually due to Narada Muni's hearing, he saw that as the mercy of the Lord. He specifically comments, I thought this as the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Another example also from the first canto is the example of Parikshit Maharaj. He also made a mistake, apparently due to weakness of heart. Ultimately, with these great souls, it's Leela, but we take it as the message for us due to weakness of heart. So Parikshit Maharaj made the mistake. He was overcome by hunger and thirst, which is impossible for someone who doesn't think he's the body. But out of arrangement of the Supreme Lord, he thought he was overwhelmed by hunger and thirst, so he comes to the ashram of Shamika Rishi, who's in Samadhi. So if someone's in Samadhi, you're probably pretty obvious. Especially in that time, they were all trained up. For us, we're not trained. If someone was in Samadhi, we would think they were sleeping. We would make probably great offense, but Parikshit Maharaj, he was a Rajarishi, a saintly king. Obviously, he would recognize if someone's in Samadhi or not. Shamika Rishi's in Samadhi, and he thinks, oh, you're not greeting me? What is your problem? You're not greeting me? I am the emperor of the world? How is it possible for Mahabhava to be overwhelmed by such... For us, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense that we can relate. Yeah. When we're reading, we get the wrong idea when we read the Bhagavatam the first time through. Yeah, we relate to Parikshit Maharaj acting in the wrong way. But Parikshit Maharaj says, how is this possibly such a great soul? I am the emperor. You're not greeting me? What is up? Okay, then I will give you a reward that is fitting for your mentality. He garlands him with a snake as a sign of disrespect. This is again all arranged by the Supreme Lord. And then, of course, as the story goes, the sage's son, Sringi, comes. He becomes offended. He says, who is this Kshatriya? The Kshatriyas are just like dogs meant to serve the Brahmanas. And he commits a lot of aparad, and then he curses him to die in 7 days. So then on the way back to the kingdom, Parikshit Maharaj is himself repenting the activity, which is natural for a good man. And he was thinking, how could I have overcome? May the reaction come immediately upon me, so that no one else would have to suffer the reaction. Because as a leader, if leaders do irresponsible activities, many people actually suffer the consequences. So Parikshit Maharaj, he was desiring that the reaction would immediately come so that others would not have to suffer for his irresponsible activity. And then, sure enough, within a short time period, a messenger comes, sent by Shamika Rishi, with the message that you're going to die in 7 days. You've been cursed to die in 7 days by Sringi. And Parikshit Maharaj, Haribo, he became very ecstatic. And in fact, I was thinking to go through some of the verses, but I opted not to. He offers one very beautiful, and his contemplations on this scene, he makes the point that the Supreme Lord has mercifully appeared before me in the form of a curse of a Brahmin boy. So that out of fear, I will break my attachment to material opulences, material kingdom, and so on. Out of fear, due to being cursed. So he offers this very beautiful concept. In fact, in another place in the Brihadbhagavatamrita, it's offered that had it first the Lord appeared before him, and the there's a way this is told. First, the Lord appeared before him in the form of the messenger. The messenger giving him the curse. That was the first way the Lord appeared before him. And then the Lord manifests before him, I forget the other point, either as detachment, bringing him to the bank of Ganga, where all the sages would come, and then ultimately Shukadeva Goswami would come to recite the Bhagavatam. So anyway, the main point here is that similarly, as with Narada Muni, the Supreme Lord made an arrangement for augmenting. Prabhupada says he wanted to bring him back to Godhead immediately. That's what Prabhupada says in one of the purports. So Krishna actually made an arrangement to expedite his existence in the material world. Similarly, another example would be Chittaketu, who was also, he saw Sankarsana. So that's not too shabby either, to see the Supreme Lord. You know, you have to have prema. So he had love for the Lord, and later on he was just joking with Narada Muni. Prabhupada gives some purports to say it was a little offensive. But naturally, you know, it was a little bit strange that Shiva was surrounded by many sages, all renunciates, and Parvati is sitting on the lap of Shiva, and he's giving pravachan. Srimad Bhagavatam class. So as we were hearing, that's an unconventional way to give class. here's my wife comes. So then Chittaketu just passed a comment, making only you can do something like this. He was having fun, making some jokes. And Parvati didn't take it too well. So she cursed him to die, cursed him to take birth as a demon. And he was not at all disturbed by this. So Parvati was actually shocked to see this. Oh, he's not at all disturbed. And Shiva, that famous verse comes there, Narayana Parasarve, Nakutashtana Bibhyati, Swarga Apavarga Narakeshu Api Tulyatra. Tulya Arta Darshina, that this is the quality of those who are servants of Lord Narayana. They have no fear of any condition of life. Whether it's swarga, aparvarga, means liberation, or hell, they see all of it equal eye. They see all of it as an arrangement of the Supreme Lord for his own purposes, and also for helping to augment their love for them. So in fact, in his body as Vitrasura, his love for Krishna did increase extremely to a high degree, and then after that body was brought back home back to Godhead. So the main point here is that the Supreme Lord's apparent punishment and apparent reward is actually equal, and all are meant for the highest welfare of the living entity. So one should be confident of that nishchaya. Nishchaya means one should have this confidence that Krishna will certainly protect me in all conditions of life. And that way, when there are these apparent reversals, we should see that it is ultimately meant to nourish our remembrance of him. Krishna, the holy name of Krishna, in Kali Yuga, the main way to take shelter of Krishna is through the holy name. Kale Namarupa Krishna Avatar. Krishna in the Kali Yuga appears as the holy name, and that holy name is Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. First of all, it's conscious. That's hard to understand. Chaitanya, the name is conscious. And it's Rasa Vigraha. It is the form of all, the reservoir of all rasas are there in the holy name of Krishna. So in order for us to give shape, in order to give shape to our chanting of the holy name, there should be remembrance of Krishna in a very intense way. And we might even venture to say a specified way. Per the verse of Ye Yata Mam Prapadyante Tam Satavya Bhajami Aham, Krishna says, as you approach me, I will reciprocate with you accordingly. So through in our chanting of the holy name of Krishna, Our remembrance of Krishna and the way we remember Krishna will give shape to our chanting of the holy name, and vice versa. And Sanatana Goswami mentions this in Brihadaratnamrita that Sankirtan augments the joy of remembrance of Krishna, and remembrance augments the joy of Sankirtan. So the two are actually dependent upon, there's a mutual dependence upon remembering Krishna and chanting the holy name of Krishna. In other words, if we're chanting spaced out, then there's no wonder we're not experiencing the rasa vigraha. So we may doubt that this verse of Lord Chaitanya is actually true. Chaitanya rasa vigraha, we say, what is a rasa vigraha? There's no rasa at all. But actually it depends on how we're remembering Krishna. So when there's a weakness of heart, that causes us not to remember Krishna, even though we're associating with him directly through his holy name. So in the verse that Queen Kunti mentions, Jaimai Shraya Shuta Shribir, that the Supreme Lord is only the wealth of those who are materially exhausted, but those who are intoxicated by an increase in wealth, beauty, money, and education, then even though they chant the holy name of Krishna, they cannot do so feelingly. They're not able to do so feelingly. Just like I often mention this short story of a man who was going to meet his girlfriend, we'll say her wife, and he bought some popcorn. And the popcorn was actually meant for his wife or girlfriend, however you want to think of it. And as he was walking past the Jamuna on the way to go meet his wife, he was having ecstatic meditations, but not on Krishna. And then a strong breeze came by and blew the popcorn toward the Jamuna. So as the popcorn was flying in Jamuna, he said, Govindaya Namaha. Govinda, this one is for you. Actually, the whole thing was actually meant for the wife only, the girlfriend. But he took advantage of, oh, I want to lose the popcorn anyway, so Govindaya Namaha, that one is for you. And the rest of it is for the girlfriend. So, of course, this is not devotion to Krishna. Devotion means you intentionally trying to please Krishna. That means that there's an intentional remembrance. So when there's weakness of the heart, we can't remember Krishna in any intense or specified way. And therefore, our chanting of the holy name lacks taste, it lacks rasa. So that's not very nice, because without experiencing the taste of the holy name, you can hardly be said to be chanting in the real sense. We have to come to the point of param jistva nivartite. We have to actually start gaining taste from our chanting the holy name, because the chanting of the holy name is actually going to save us. So therefore, Krishna has to make various arrangements for us to augment our remembrance of him. So Prabhupada comments there in the purport, as I recall, that the chanting of the holy name should be just like a child crying out to his mother. That's how one should be chanting the holy name. That means like utter desperation. Then Krishna will be taking us seriously. When a child is, we have much experience during the Sunday feast, that when a child is calling his mother in desperation, it's not like he's like, you know, Mataji, can you please come? Like very calmly, you know, if he's hungry or thirsty, he said, Mataji, I'm lying here, I'm hungry, you know. Can you feed me? Actually can't speak English or anything. All he can do is scream. And there, if it's just like I don't know, she's having a conversation, she's not going to take that seriously, you know. Oh, he's not doing anything. But as soon as the baby really screams, so much so that everyone in the temple can hear, then the mother is forced to consider the plight of her child, and she immediately comes running. So also, the chanting of the holy name should be such. And not only the chanting of the holy name, but how we conduct our devotional service should be such, with the desperation to attain Krishna. Unfortunately, due to attachment to matter, it's very hard to get that real sense of helplessness, which will help us call out to Krishna in such a way. So Krishna has his strategies to help us come to that point. He also plays chess, coincidentally. Chess, that was the first thing I learned in kindergarten when I first got into chess playing, is that chess comes from India. That was the first thing we learned. We had a whole chess manual. So it originates in Krishna. And Krishna, there's a pastime, I think, in Krishna, but where Balaram was playing chess, who was he playing chess with? He was playing with Rukmini. But there was someone else he was playing chess with, Balaram. No, but Balaram was playing chess with someone, isn't it? He killed someone because he was playing chess with someone, they cheated. And Balaram takes care of that. He expedited his coming back home for his cheating. Anyway, my point is that Krishna, to play chess, you have to be really good at strategy making. And you have to, I guess you have to be somewhat good at calculation, because you have to see you have to foresee many opportunities, and at least 10, if the better you are, the further ahead you can see. Some people can calculate 20, 30 moves ahead. If I do this move, then this is going to happen 30 moves later. Sometimes you have to be so Krishna, of course, he's omniscient, so he has his strategies for bringing us back home, back to Godhead. And in order to do that, we actually have to really be feeling ourselves helpless. Otherwise, we won't sincerely call out to him. But as conditioned souls, it's very hard for us to do this. So he has his strategies for helping us to feel helpless and thus calling out to him with sincerity. So one of the main messages we take from this Leela is that Krishna is actually, in fact, doing that. And we should rather feel inspired than discouraged hearing this pastime. That Krishna is so kind that he will do whatever it takes to bring out the best in us and drag us back home, back to Godhead. So this is the main idea. Both his reward and punishment is equal. And we should have that confidence and fearlessly move forward in Krishna consciousness. That's that verse I was quoting the other day. Tathagata Madhava Tavaka Kuchit Prashanti Twayi Brishanti Margat Twayi Bodhisorida. You remember, this verse? Twaya Bigupta Vichara Nirbhaya. Vichanaya Nirbhaya means they move forward without fear, the devotees of the Lord. They're not like the non-devotees whom the Krishna doesn't protect because they're thinking, I'm very powerful, I'm very strong. Who needs God? I am God. So for those persons, Krishna doesn't offer any protection. But the devotees of the Lord, even if they appear to fall down, they do not fall down like the non-devotees. Vrishanti margat twai bhadasorida. This is due to their being in a tie of friendship with the Supreme Lord. So the Supreme Lord, Twaya Abhigupta, he always protects the devotees. And therefore, the devotees being confident of this, virchanaya nirbhaya, they move forward without fear. And they easily stomp on the heads of their aggressors who try to impede their march back home, back to Godhead. That's the last line of the verse. I forget the Sanskrit. It means they trump on their heads. like all the anarthas, the devotees are able to step on those obstacles to bhakti and ultimately attain the Supreme Lord because they're confident in the Lord's protection. So these pastimes are ultimately meant to instill that confidence in our heart. The other important lesson to take from this pastime, as Prabhupada comments in this section, is the dangers of, it's not sufficient to give up non-devotee sangha, but you have to also accept the positive thing, which is association with devotees. So that is also highlighted in this discussion. we'll highlight it here also briefly. Just giving up non-devotional sangha is not sufficient. We have to also associate with devotees in order to be guaranteed of protection. Prabhupada said it's like a bundle of sticks. So if there's one stick, it's easy to snap. We all have experience of that. Maya doesn't. She loves those who are, they want to be absorbed in bhajan as neophytes. Oh, very good. Yes, do your bhajan. Very good bhajan you're doing. Ah, nam bhajan. Yes, Haribo. Maya will encourage us through the mind. The mind is her greatest agent. So she'll encourage, yeah, all these neophyte devotees, they'll not help to augment your Krishna consciousness. You need to be absorbed in bhajan. They're absorbed in speaking prajapa and fall finding. You know what? What is this? This is neophyte sangha. They cannot help you. Bhajan. So you go and you get absorbed, and Maya's like, very good, nonsense. And she smashes us. So Prabhupada mentions this is a highlight of the pastime also, the dangers of. In fact, in the Briha Bhavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami mentions that Bharata Maharaj uses his own life as an example to show the dangers of not having association with devotees, even if you're very advanced. That Sanatana Goswami says it in Briha Bhavatamrita, which I found to be, that's a pretty big risk, a pretty powerful example to take that risk of taking another body just to show devotees in the future that even if you're very advanced, you still require the association of devotees. So no one should ever think that they don't require the association of devotees at any stage. Narottam Das Thakur prays, Tandera Charana Sevi Bhakta Sane Vas Janame Janame Hoy Eya Bilash, that somehow or other, let me become a servant of the Vaishnavas, and let me live with devotees also. Not only do I want to be a servant of them, because you can serve from a far distance also, right? I am also serving the devotees, bhajan. I am rendering service. Let me also live with devotees, bhakta sane vas. Let me live with devotees, even if it's very difficult, as it is expected to be, especially when we're under the modes of nature. As is often mentioned, if it wasn't for the Krishna factor, I highly doubt any of us would care to even look at each other. Maybe some of us, but I don't find that they're very similar devotees living in the ashram, at least. I'm looking around now, I still don't see that there's... The only thing we have in common right now is tilak on the face and dhotis. But as far as our natures are concerned, many of our natures are actually quite contrary to one another. Therefore, we do have some issues every now and again. You know, it's just like the... Dinabandhu Prabhu, when he came, he gave a nice example of rocks with jagged edges all keep hitting against each other, but ultimately it smooths out the edges and the rocks become smooth. So like that, we're in our jagged rock stage right now. So there may be clashes every now and then. So it's difficult to live in the association of devotees. But without the association of devotees, it would be completely hellish. Life before devotional sangha was completely hell. And we forget, ultimately living in the association of devotees is so sweet. Especially there's prasadam three times a day, and devotees are nice. Generally, they're very nice, and we forget oftentimes how horrible we were suffering in Maya before we came. So it is important to remember that also, so that the contrast of suffering and enjoyment will be so apparent that you cannot but take shelter association with devotees, even if you're having trouble with them. They're much better even than the greatest materialistic person. So Narottam Das Thakur prays, let me also live with devotees. And this is my desire birth after birth. Let me be the servant of devotees and let me live with them also. And in Bharata Maharaj pastime, this is highlighted also, the importance of taking the sangha of devotees. Krishna bhakti jama mulahai saru sangha, Krishna prema janami tena punamukhi anga. Mahaprabhu says that even the root cause of bhakti is saru sangha. And even after prema awakens, Sadhu Sangha remains the Mukhya Anga. Mukhya Anga means, Mukhya means primary consideration. The Mukhya Anga, the primary limb, still remains that Sadhu Sangha. So this point is so important. And there's another reason that is relevant to conditioned souls, is that without the Sangha of devotees, no association with devotees means association with your mind. So this is particularly relevant for conditioned souls. When we don't associate with devotees, it's not that you have no association. We could say, well, I have the association of super soul. That would be nice. That's theoretical. But actually, we're associating with our minds. And the mind is, generally speaking, the mind is a great enemy. Even after you've contained it, Rishabhdev says, you still should not place trust in the mind. The mind is compared to a serpent. A serpent is one who strikes without being provoked. Without being provoked, the serpent will strike. So the mind is very much like that. Many times we actually agitate our mind on purpose. We do things that will agitate the mind. We put ourselves in a situation we know we're going to be agitated. You know, that is, of course, because we second-class intelligence or less. But sometimes we do things that are proper also. And without being provoked, the mind just boom. You know, you're sitting there chanting japa. And things are going for the whole first hour, I didn't take rest. And then you start to feel ecstatic, so you do this circular thing because the ecstasy, I'm not sleeping. You feel, when you don't sleep when you're doing japa, you feel really ecstatic because usually it's just like a struggle. And sometimes even if you're not sleeping but you just feel like you're just about to sleep, it's just painful. But when you feel energetic and you're chanting japa, you feel very ecstatic. You're swinging and then the mind's like, oh, you're having a good time, huh? Boom. You know, everything is ruined. The mind will say, without being provoked, the mind is like a venomous serpent. Without being provoked, it will, you know, don't you remember this one? You know, this one? How about this scene? Let's check out this trailer or this pastime and so on. So the mind is very vicious. So without association of devotees, and association of devotees, of course, means mama vira samvido, discussing the powerful activities of Krishna. This is association of devotees. Otherwise, it's association with other people's minds. Our mind is already problematic enough, and other people's minds just add to it. So association with devotees means to talk about Krishna. When you associate with devotees, then there's no question of the mind victimizing us. That's impossible, in fact, because the mind is actually, how do you say? It's a binary processor. It can't do too many things at once. Therefore, when you're on the altar, when you're on the altar, you can space out. Therefore, you should do one other thing that is also Krishna conscious while worshiping the deity. So I like to chant while I'm doing the worship. Because the mind can't do three things simultaneously, very difficult. It can't think of nonsense and worship the deity and chant simultaneously. So when you give the mind too many Krishna conscious activities, it can't think of nonsense. It's not possible. And especially when you're engaged in conversation, to do it effectively, you have to actually hear the other person and then respond properly. So therefore, that requires the mind to actually pay attention. So that is association of devotees, but if we don't take that association seriously, then we're associating with our minds. And our minds are unfortunately our enemies in the conditioned state. They will easily victimize it. And even for one who's advanced. Again, I gave the other point about Krishna's mercy, but even when you're advanced, one can become a victim. Prabhupada says no one should ever think that his mind is trained up in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is asking him if he would go and meet Pratapa Rudra Maharaj. And Mahaprabhu says some pretty heavy things. We're not going through all those things. But he speaks many heavy things. And one thing he says is that to see a woman or a man enjoying his sense gratification is worse than drinking poison willingly. And then Mahaprabhu says, my mind becomes agitated even if I just see a wooden form of a woman. What to speak of, actually, just seeing and that's a fact. we may say, no, how is it possible? Actually, I think Mahaprabhu says, if my foot touches a wooden form of a woman, my mind will become agitated. And that's a fact. If you see, the way they make the mannequins now, we go downtown for Harinam Sankirtan, and we sit in front of the Ralph Lauren store, and they have these mannequins and doing all sorts of images, poses, and so on. And you have to sit there and be absorbed in the Maha Mantra. The Vaya immediately agitates if you see. If you just go like this, you know, you still could be in trouble, but it's a little okay. But if you happen to be chanting and just observing, then you're going to be in big trouble. The mind is such. And Mahaprabhu is saying for himself, he's a sannyasi. Of course, he's God, but he's to set up the example. And there, Prabhupada makes the point that no one should ever think that their mind is trained up. Even if you become very advanced, you should never think your mind is trained up. Maya is always ready to victimize. As soon as you make one little space out, get them now, and finished. So therefore, that lesson we also get from this pastime Srila Prabhupada has mentioned throughout this chapter and other places. So in this way, having confidence in the Lord and being strict as possible, it'll be tough because there is weakness of heart, so that has to be systematically uprooted in order to become more and more strict about remembering Krishna exclusively. Weakness of heart has to be systematically removed. But we should try our very best in order to move forward towards the goal of life. So I'm going to finish there now. Oh, that's not a problem. I'm going to ask something.
Thank you. Since we've been discussing this pastime, one thing that I've been appreciating is the varieties of ways in which Krishna expedites, as you were describing, expedites a person's return back to Godhead. I've been thinking about, you know, Bharat Maharaj's case, and we discussed that, you know, he was the king and a super devotee for 10 million years, completely detached, all of that. But he had to take the life of a deer, while Ajamila, I mean, it's only one lifetime. And he did all sorts of, you know, Bharat Maharaj only got attracted to a deer, and that too, you know, gently, lovingly. Ajamila went and married a prostitute and had so many kids and, you know, all of that.
He was 88 years old.
8 years old. And he saw the Vishnu Dutas, and that very lifetime, he gets back to Godhead. So if you could...
Yeah, so we should not be envious. When we hear these past, in fact, that's when one is very immature, they become envious hearing why Krishna dealt with him in this way and didn't and dealt with this person in that way. but we should not become envious because Krishna knows what is best for all living entities. See, the main issue with the conditioned soul is that we can't foresee the future. We can't foresee the future. And so we're always speculating about better ways that things could have actually happened and not having confidence that things happen exactly the way they needed to happen in order for me as an individual to be fully convinced about the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. So I don't want to comment into the details of specific devotees in the Bhagavatam, which are they're on a totally another level. But as a general principle, when we see, like for example, I'll bring it down a level to how the spiritual master deals with different devotees. And we see sometimes one living entity seems to be getting so much mercy, and I seem to be a little bit more dedicated, and I'm hardly getting anything at all. And the tendency may be to get envious. In fact, this happens a lot with Radhanath Maharaj, where, you know, I'm like, I'm a brahmachari, I'm like, dedicated life. And so this guy is just a newbie, new kid on the block, but so much mercy is coming to him. What about me? I need mercy too. And the tendency may be to get envious, but we have to understand that the Supreme Lord and also his devotees, they who get inspired from the Supreme Lord directly, they're giving each living entity exactly what they need in order for that individual to be convinced. We're always thinking that if it was like that, then I would have also been very successful or been very fixed. But the Supreme Lord actually knows very well what was required for that individual to become fully edified and Krishna conscious. Another thing is that although Ajamil got released in one lifetime, that doesn't mean that's necessarily the better. Of course, it doesn't indicate more mercy. And also, to take birth again may actually be considered better. And in a lot of ways, because again, as I was pointing out, Krishna actually does that to augment the intensity of love for him. So then from that perspective, to take birth again was actually better. So then someone might get envious of that. Then why I didn't take birth again? Because your love would not have augmented. It would have decreased. So my point, I guess what I'm saying is that, again, it comes back to the confidence that the Lord knows what is best for every individual. God is a person, and we are also persons. And God is dealing with living entities in a personal way. It is not... I often like to mention this to the Christians or people of other traditions. It's not that just by joining the right church that you're going to go back home, back to Godhead. I joined the right institution. But actually, God is dealing with every living entity in a very personalized way. And so he personally knows how to address the various issues systematically. For Ajamil, he may need to go through a life of sin to be totally convinced when he saw the Yamadutas. Maybe if he only lived partially a sinful life, he would have not thought of Narayana. But by living such a sinful life, by getting attached to Narayana, my point is that I don't know that this is the case, but we can never know what the Supreme Lord is actually designed for a living entity. But we should be confident that he's dealing with every entity personally and dealing with them in a way that is best for that individual. So we should not become envious. Perhaps if the spiritual master were to show me more attention, I'd become so proud that I'd fall down. So he becomes a little bit apparently negligent. But actually he's being very attentive to us and our mentality. And therefore he doesn't show apparently as much mercy, but he's actually supremely merciful to us by neglecting us. So that we don't become excessively proud, thinking, see how the spiritual masters recognize me and fall down. So we cannot, of course, we should not predicate the mind, but we should have the confidence that they know what is best. And that is hard because that is not readily available to us with their thinking, son. So therefore, our faith in God and Guru is so much important for our ultimate ascension. I don't know if that does justice to your question, but...
Yeah, so. I'm not uncomfortable that Ajamila went back. I'm just expressing that the varieties of ways in which there is customized, if you will, specifically for that devotee that's best for him or her. This is interesting. See if you had...
Thank you. Yeah, I guess Bhakta Glenn wants to say something.
Thank you for class, Prabhu. We're living in community, so that's advantageous for us. And is
from a certain perspective.
Unless we're good at being a hermit or something, but when one another, when different devotees receive gifts, doesn't that have the potential to really elevate all of us, to help us all?
When devotees receive gifts, what do you mean? I mean, I could say yes, but you can maybe specify.
When the Lord blesses them, you know, when the Lord gives them an insight or teaches them something important or calls them to a certain kind of service that's beneficial for them.
Don't we all benefit from that? Yeah, we may or may not. Maybe Krishna wants just that soul to benefit, and we don't get so much benefit from that. But a Vaishnava actually feels happy to see others benefiting. So that should be more of our focus. Am I getting benefit by their getting mercy? That may also be true, but that can be... The focus is still kind of on, I mean, mine. He got the benefit, so I must have also got the benefit, which is what's really important for me. that soul got the benefit is less important. That I also got the benefit through him, that is more important. But whether we get the benefit or not, more important for us and our cultivation of the mentality for entering into the spiritual world is that we become supremely happy in seeing other devotees getting the mercy. Like when Pratapa Rudra Maharaj finally got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, all devotees became ecstatic. And he got some mercy that other devotees didn't get. But they didn't think, oh, what is this? I'm a renunciate. Immediately becoming envious. Rather, they became supremely happy. And Krishna, he inquires this question to, I read something, and this came up, where he was inquiring from Srimati Radharani. I should have wrote it down. It was very beautiful. But he says, who are those persons whose happiness is seeing the happiness of other devotees, and whose greatest distress is seeing the distress of other devotees, and who are completely absorbed in rigid devotional service to the Supreme Lord in the realm of Vrindavan? Who are those devotees? And Srimati Radharani responds to Krishna by saying that those are my friends, like Lalita and others. And so what's very interesting about this statement is that this is the mentality of a Brajavasi, that they become supremely happy in seeing the benefit of others in general, and specifically devotees, and they become supremely distressed in seeing the distress of other devotees. So more important for us in our cultivation of the mentality for going back home back to Godhead is just to become happy when all the devotees are getting benefited. And that requires step-by-step removal of anarthas, because without going to anartha nirvritti, you actually can't feel happy when others are getting, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays in the Marajivan, when others are happy, I feel very distressed. And when others are distressed, I feel very happy. Paramasukha. And that's actually a fact. We don't want to feel that way, but the reality of the situation is when their anarthas are very thick, when other devotees are getting mercy, you feel that pinch in your heart. And if you meditate on too much, it gets deeper and deeper and deeper. You go into darkness mode, you know? And you start having doubts about the spiritual master and everything. You know, you just go wild from there. And that's due to anarthas. So we do have to actually remove the anarthas. And how this is my indication that anarthas are going. You actually feel happy when devotees are happy. And when they're distressed, you feel very much afflicted. It's very hard to feel like that in our conditioned state. When other devotees are afflicted, we find fault with them. The conditioned mentality is to push someone down when they're down, right? Kick them while they're down. That's the conditioned mentality. How many of us feel afflicted when we see other devotees are in distress? When we're afflicted, we can think of nothing else, isn't it? We have experience. But when others are afflicted, we say, Prabhu, I'm sorry to hear that. And we go on about our life. So this is, whether or not we get the benefit, if other devotees are also benefiting, more important for us is just to feel happy that other devotees are benefiting. And we can't really do that if we have too many anarthas, but we can try to cultivate that mentality. You can think, at least you should think, I should feel very good. This devotee is getting the mercy. You should make the mind think in that way. Even though the heart is feeling pinched. The heart is feeling pinched, but through the intelligence, you say, tell the mind, stop your nonsense. Feel happy, you know. Force the mind to. At least we're working on that. That's our cultivation. Is there anything else anyone would like to say or inquire? I have a few minutes.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you very much. You were mentioning devotees are not concerned being elevated to higher planets or lower planets.
Really? Where did I mention that?
Narayana Parasarve.
Oh, I didn't say that. That's not exactly how it said. They see all with equal eye. So not that they're not interested, but they see all with equal eye. One way you can take that is that they see everything as hell. Because, in fact, in the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami, and when he discusses how bhakti surpasses liberation, he quotes this verse to show how devotees think liberation and swarga to be equal to hell. But also it just means that in all circumstances, they see service to Krishna. So if Krishna wants me to go to Swargaloka, I'm ready to go to Swargaloka also. And Krishna wants me to go to hell, like in the case of the story with the gopis, I'm ready to go to hell also. The point is that they see with an equal eye means they see service to Krishna in all situations. Therefore, they have no fear. As a servant of God, then Krishna will certainly protect me. Therefore, they're fearless. Now, kutashtana bibhyati, they have no fear. In all situations, they see service of God. So I didn't exactly translate it like that. That could make a difference.
Thank you. That was helpful. Also, we see devotees who have this consciousness also have a strong desire to go back to the spiritual world. So it seems to be apparently contradictory.
On the strength of this verse, say it's contradictory, because they mention swarga, apravarga, and hell. They don't mention anything about Vaikuntha. So I don't know, on the strength of this verse, we can say it's contradictory. And the Briha Bhagavatamrita, when the Vaikuntha Vasis are talking to Gopal Kumar, they mentioned that, they say that when you have prema, there's no difference between the spiritual world and the material world. Because in both places, you're serving God with pure love. And the spiritual world just means devotional service to God. In fact, in 271 Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that attainment of devotional service is the attainment of the kingdom of God. So the Vaikuntha Vasis, they point that out. But then they say, but we should also know that, you know, Vaikuntha's got something also that is special. Because in Vaikuntha, one can render service without the Lord without any impediments. In the material world, you have the impediment of a gross material body. It doesn't have all the powers of a spiritual body. Spiritual bodies have amazing powers that that Sanatana Goswami goes through throughout that. They have amazing powers to serve Krishna. Just as Krishna expands to satisfy various devotees, his devotees also have powers to expand in order to serve Krishna in all those variety of ways. If they see that the sun is too hot on Krishna's back, their forms can change into an umbrella for the service of Krishna. Maybe we shouldn't mention these things. It might cause doubts in people. This stuff is so far out. Just like, what to speak of the Christians? If they read our shastras, the scientists, they're going to have a field day. We believe that there are some universes where Brahma has 10 million heads. Madhavendra was mentioning that. The scientists, they go to the court of law and say, look at this. They believe someone has 10 million heads. I rest my case, you know, everything finished. But in the spiritual world, their bodies have amazing spiritual powers, and they can serve Krishna unlimitedly in an unlimited variety of ways. Whereas in the material world, practically the main thing is the bhava, because the material body is so limited in its capacity in a lot of ways. So the Vaikunthavasis point this out, that Vaikuntha is still a very special place, and one should acknowledge that reality, that although when you have prema, that both realities are equally the same because of service to Godhead, but still at the same time, the spiritual world is a very special atmosphere. And it is very natural for devotees to want to go back to Godhead. In fact, and especially in the neophyte stage, but even in the advanced stage, that longing is what crushes the material desires. It is not that we, in our neophyte stage, can actually sincerely pray, Nandanam nanjanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kama ye mama jamini jamanishwade. As neophytes, as soon as we hear jamini jamanishwade, what? Rewind. Birth after birth, I only desire to serve you selflessly. I'm like, no, I don't. That is not possible for a neophyte devotee. So, I remember when I first joined the movement, I was so inspired by that message that the devotees will go to hell for service to Krishna. I would always mention that to the newcomers, that this is real love of God, that are you ready to go to hell? And I thought I had the mentality, but then one day I actually thought about it, when I heard that pastime of the gopis being ready to go to hell eternally to remove Krishna's headache for one moment. So I actually thought about that soberly. And I was like, nah. I was horrified. I was like, I'm not ready to go to hell eternally to remove Krishna's headache for one moment. That means in the next moment he will still have headache, but now I'm in hell. Like, I thought about it soberly. I was mortified. I was like, wow, I can't imagine the love that the gopis have for Krishna. Because if they say even for one moment, that means in the next moment Krishna will have a headache, but now I'm in hell eternally for just one moment of removal of Krishna's headache. So it is very natural actually to strongly desire going back to Godhead. That is a strong motivating factor, because one can serve Krishna according to his heart's desire without any impediments in Vaikuntha. So I don't think that's contrary, and definitely it is not contradictory based on the strength of that one verse, because they don't mention Vaikuntha at all there. It is actually very essential. Even for one who has bhava, they're very intensely desiring to go back to the spiritual world. So much so that they live inside the dham. Or at least there's a strong desire to reside in a dham where Krishna actually performed his pastimes. So there's a lot of evidence that seems to indicate otherwise, that it is very natural and very progressive to a strong desire. But along with the desire, it's a strong desire to serve Krishna. So if Krishna wants me to be in the material world for his service, then the devotee is ready to do that also. Just like Prabhupada, we hear that story where Prabhupada was, they were confiscated, I think, quarantined for some reason. I don't know where it was at, maybe it was in China or something. And Prabhupada said, I didn't want to come here. I just didn't want to come here. And Brahmananda was saying, I'm sorry, Prabhupada. He thought he meant coming to that place. I'm sorry, Prabhupada. We should have made better arrangements. And Prabhupada said, no, I didn't want to come in the material world. They were a little shocked. I didn't want to come in the material world, but Krishna asked me to come here and to preach Krishna consciousness. And I told them, I argued, but everyone is... I think Prabhupada said he wanted me to come and write books. I think probably, at least that's how we've heard the past time. And he said, but who is there to read the books? Everyone's so dumb in Kali Yuga. Who is there to read the book? And Krishna said, no, no, don't worry. I will protect you. So that's far out. So devotee, although he wants, see, he said, I didn't want to come here. Because the material world is actually quite a dark place. So who wants to be in a dark place? But then the desire to serve Krishna overrided the desire not to come to the material world. So that is also intrinsic to a devotee's love for God. So my point is that going back home back to Godhead, that strong desire is essential. Otherwise we've been grihavratanam for birth after birth, trying to make this material world our home. So that I would venture to say that it's actually essential to desire in that way. So thank you very much for tolerating me. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.